Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good Lord. My name is Brett Ballantini. You can call me Brett. This is podcast number 35, I think. Lost track of a lot of things this year with the Chicago White Sox. We're here to talk about the Chicago White Sox for as long as I can stand it. And who knows what we'll break into otherwise. We've got a crew of four other Southside Sox writers, including back bad nationwide. With an alcohol shelf that he's going to be tapping into, oh, golly, over these next 6 weeks. It's Trevor Lyons. We coming out of Louisville? Where are we coming out of?
Yep, I am in Louisville.
All right, straight out of Louisville. We got Jordan. Oh, my God, I'm going to get it wrong every single time. I'm going to say this time, Jordan Haas. And, okay, close enough. All right, I'm getting closer and closer. Now, Jordan has just joined up with us. She has taken on Bird app recaps, killing it there. But really, at this point, questioning the decision to go all in with the White Sox to the point of actually writing for them. But hey, listen, join the crew. We all suffer in such a way. His internet was almost out enough to save him. But no, it came back enough that Dante Jones has to join us for this podcast. And some sort of migraine, gray hair, pain, sickness has taken half of our Indianapolis field office away from this podcast. So supporting the way to both, the cubicles are very vacant right now because only Joe Reesus is occupying the Indianapolis field office right now. Joe, thank you for joining. Okay, I tried to delay talking about this Chicago White Sox team for as long as I can with extended, foolish, and mispronouncing intros, but the White Sox are 3.5 out of first place. Their record is something. I don't really care. It's 500. It could be 1660, 1550, 100, 100. I don't know. The stretch of easy games where they were supposed to win 12 out of 19, I think was the consensus that I demanded everybody agree to. I believe right now 8-8. So in theory, could make a big rally against Detroit and still win 11 instead of 12. And boy, will we be excited thinking the White Sox will be going to the playoffs. White Sox have just lost in Kansas City 3 of 4 games. I conservatively, doing my dumbass prediction thing for the rest of the season, said the White Sox would split. It's pretty tough to win a 4-game series, especially when it's 4 games in 3 days. But they managed to make me seem really foolishly optimistic because they could not win a series against Kansas City, a team actively trying to punt the season. So let's just start as we usually do. It's the Biorhythms moment of the podcast. And let's talk a little bit about how you're feeling coming out of losing 3 of 4. I'm going to go to the top corner, 2 block down to Indianapolis. Joe Reesus, tell me how you're feeling.
Not too great. there is a lot to talk about as far as what has gone wrong. I think at the end of the season, we may look back on at this series that just happened in Kansas City as being like, you know, the moment where, you know, the season truly felt like it was grinding to a halt. Like, you know, I mean, I guess there are in a season with a lot of small ups and downs resulting in that 500 record. There have been a lot of bad moments mixed in there along the way. But you know, there's always been the silver lining of, well, the division is very weak, and later on in the schedule, they'll have a lot of easy opponents. But I mean, they've used up a lot of their easy opponents now. And yeah, like you said, 8-8 just won't cut it against that recent schedule that they've had. And that's a difficult pill to swallow, but that's what we're up against right now.
Yeah. Okay, Jordan, you made it clear. You are second guessing your decision to commit to the White Sox in the form of actually writing about them. But as a fan, how you been feeling? It's really been great since you joined up with us.
We've won a total of two games since I've joined. I think my prediction Sunday night was we went 3-1 and we did the exact opposite. But, you know, at least it wasn't Crystal's prediction where we get swept.
Oh, yeah. It's the truth. Yes, that was the one that I wanted to go along with, Jordan. And unfortunately, White Sox were not listening. It's rare. Hello, Rick Hahn. Do something. Rick, do something. Okay, Dante, vibe check. Where are you at with this team?
Well, Tim Madison's injury kind of put a damper on things. I was at the friendly confines about the same time they said 4 to 6 weeks. I'm just like, well, I'm already at a Cubs game and now I get screwed more. So that was nice.
Yeah. It's like, it can't get worse.
Like, at least it gives me no reason to commit to watching every game the rest of this year. Cause in my opinion, Tim Madison going down means this team's done for the season.
Yeah. Yeah, really sort of burying the lead there, because that is going to make it really tough to climb back, even just 3.5 games, as ridiculous as that is. But Dante, thanks for signing up for Sunday. You can't get out of it now. Okay, Trevor Lyons, out of nowhere. The team is so bad, it has forced him to resurface on Southside Sox podcast. I myself am delighted. But Trevor, your thoughts, try to compress 2 months of thoughts into just a minute or two.
Yeah, it's, I think I mentioned it in our Slack chat, but it seems like there's been a lot of new lows throughout the season. But there was always the fact that the Central Division was so bad. And it seemed like every time that the Sox would get too far out of it, the Twins and the Guardians would go on a little losing streak and the Sox would kind of stay right there. And today was one of those days where I think it was the bottom for me, just because they had Cease on the mound, and he's the guy that, you know, you can count on a win typically. And the way that they lost, leaving all those runners on base and not executing with less than two outs. And then the fact that the Guardians won on top of it to put even more distance. It was a tough blow.
But Trevor, you're close enough to your playing career to know how important 13 hits are, even when you only score two runs.
Yep. Yeah. 13 hits, not much for extra bases until the game was somewhat out of reach. So it's tough to string those hits together when it's a bad fundamentally team. If you don't do the little things right and also don't hit for power, it makes things tough.
All right, Adrian Serrano, I know you wanted to avoid this podcast if at all possible, but no, unfortunately, we dragged you into it. Thank you for showing up. And please now give me an update on how you're feeling about the White Sox team that has just gone to Kansas City and lost 3 or 4 games that they need to be winning.
I've turned a corner on this team. Like, this is actually officially, I'm on record now. This is officially my favorite team of all time. I feel like I'm never going to see another team like this. Like, this, every time I turn on the TV, there's something that I never thought I would see before. And like, so I'm just trying to like take it for what that is. And this is, you know, it's entertaining, and it's definitely a team that I will never forget. Like, there's just, I can't, there's no words sometimes for it, and there's no use getting angry at it. I'm just like, I'm in awe. I am in awe of this 2022 White Sox team.
That's a valid point, but Adrian, talk to me next August. We'll see about that.
You're only four games back, you know, in the loss column. So I'm not panicking yet.
Hey, Steve, Steve's jumped off the train, so we're the only ones carrying the loss column anymore. All right, listen, Tony La Russa, at least within our group, Luke Smales, the other half of the rumored Dugout Metrics podcast that Trevor is part of, rumored at least, he pointed out, you know, that Tony had a particularly bad post-game news conference. And, you know, who cares? They're all bad, right? But it got me to thinking, if there's anything, what should Tony La Russa be doing? I mean, okay, besides the obvious, I know he should quit. Okay, no, we're not going to give, that's not the answer you can give. That's a cheat. But what could he be doing? Is there something he could be doing he's not doing that you would like to hear? You know, Ozzie Guillen is not exactly, you know, the best template here. He's a guy who would claim he would take hits for his players, which he did sometimes, but then he was also good at throwing them under the bus. It seems like something that's a little bit different than what's being done here, what Tony just either is just sleeping through things, or he's not going to come out against anybody unless the guy speaks the truth. Like, I don't know, Johnny Cueto, just a couple games ago, questioning maybe a little bit of the heart of the fire in the clubhouse. Is there something he can be doing at this point? Again, besides quit, because we know none of us want him here, certainly not now. Is there something that he could be doing to make you feel a little bit better about this team, or that the team is being managed in a way that might allow them to rally? I mean, as much as we joke and laugh, and as pathetic as this team is, they're 3.5 out. They're literally one series from perhaps, potentially, theoretically, mathematically, being a first place team. So the season is not over, as much as we laugh about it. Is there something he could be doing and practicing to the media, to his team, that you're not seeing?
Yeah, for me, I just, it's tough. He's been out of the game for a while. He's definitely up there in age. And when you hear him talk, he just doesn't have that fire, that energy, that type of even vocal inflection that can get people to rally around you. And I don't know if he has that in him. Yeah. So I would say, if possible, just show a little bit more energy yourself but obviously from his comments before the game today, he doesn't think they have a problem with a lack of fire, and took exception to Cueto bringing that up, which all of us can see pretty clearly from the outside looking in, that it seems like some of these guys are going through the motions and don't, you know, I always say I would love, after Moncada strikes out or something, just to see any sort of emotion, whether it's negative. If Moncada snapped a bat over his knee, I would love that, just because it shows that he actually cares. And you can't really see that from the outside looking in right now with a lot of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, the extreme is eyewash, of course, but to never see it from really almost any of these guys is, I mean, that's almost, to Adrian's point, that's almost like mathematically impossible. They're competitors. A lot of these guys have been in the game for years. I mean, they've all been playing since they're little kids. Extraordinary lack of fire, and it does come from the top. And you got to figure at this point, Tony just doesn't have it. You know, last year you get away with it, they're winning. This year, they are just clearly not winning. Other things that perhaps jump out to you that you might want to see from Tony that could just make us feel any better, is just a lost cause?
I really don't think there's anything that he can do at this point. Like, you know, the kind of, everybody is pretty morose in that clubhouse. And you said, like, there's just no energy to be had. So, like, I don't think anything that Tony could do as a manager, you know, I think it'd be nice if he was a little bit more, you know, transparent and spoke like a human being, you know, to the press, instead of like just so stuck in that 80s and early 90s mentality where, like, I'm smarter because I'm the coach and I will not, you know, even begin to let you question the intent or the, you know, the effort on the field. But like, you don't have to be Ozzie and call people out by name, but you can say that, like, hey, we suck right now and we don't want to do that anymore, and we're working hard to try not to suck anymore. And like, there's nothing wrong with saying that, you know, that's, yeah. If your guys can't look at themselves in the face as a 500 team that was supposed to be running away with this division and say that we suck this year, then, you know, there's more problems than just Tony.
Adrian, talk to me when you're not only a Hall of Famer baseball person, but also like went to law school. Okay. He is better than all of us. All right. I got news for you. Newsflash. He's better than all of us. Any other thoughts on Tony La Russa, or is it just a sickening topic that we should pass on?
I mean, at this point, it feels like everybody said, like there's no energy from the team. Like that's a big thing. Again, like when you're winning, you're always going to have energy. Even when you go through a rough stretch, you still got energy because you've been doing so much winning. And there's not very much Tony can do about that because, I mean, this is a 500 team this season. There's not much, like, unless they go on a Cardinals last year or Mariners early this year type run, they're not going to, they don't even have to worry about playoffs. They'll be done October 3rd or 4th at the latest, all that fun stuff. They could win the division, but, I mean, if you win the division, you're still not getting, like, the Mariners come in, Julio Rodriguez, 3-run home run, top of the third inning or something. We, like, there's nothing Tony can do at this point. There's nothing anyone can do at this point. This season's become a wash to me.
Yeah, you know, Tim Anderson could come back for the last couple of weeks of the season. Yeah, right. Come on. Last 2 weeks of the season, the Sox are going to be 10 out. Or maybe not. It's been a dance all year, and it's just impossible for any AL Central team to bury any others. All I got to say, not to cite my stupid article again, but Cleveland is playing better than they would have been anticipated. And that is a dangerous thing for the White Sox, because the White Sox are playing worse than anticipated, as evidenced by this last 4-game set. Another thing that came up in our group is Frank. Well, it's everywhere, right? Frank Menachino. He's a fall guy for the White Sox offense, as he should be. He's the hitting batting coach, quote unquote. He's made his, you know, like whatever controversial, you know, thing about fuck the long ball. Like, oh, you know, I guess that means you're supposed to hit grounders. That can't be what he's actually promoting, but maybe it is. The stats rolling around now from, I think, is Jeremy Frank. 70% of the White Sox hits this year are singles. And the company in recent history that has the White Sox keeping is, well, let's put it this way. It's not strong company. It's not a group that you want to be with, like 12 Marlins teams. It seems to me to be a little bit of a straw man to blame too much on Frank. The players still hit. I can't fathom that if he says hit ground balls, they're going to go like, oh, okay, coach. And just like, stomp the ball into the ground. They're not going to do that. But obviously it comes from the top. There's something weird going on organizationally with this team where they want strikeouts and ground balls. I don't think that's winning baseball. You know, Trevor, you can check me on that. But where's the fault lie with this offense? Because clearly, as much as you want to defend it, and as much as there have been some decent performances, I guess Abreu, I don't know, I guess it was Mendick before he killed himself, you know, the offense is the problem. And where does the fault lie, guys?
I'm gonna take the absolute stance again. It is Menachino, but not in the way that you were saying he's like, telling them to, you know, hit ground balls or whatever. I think it's a fundamental hitting change with a lot of the guys. It's like someone noticed, I think last year, that Eloy had changed his stance since he'd gotten back from his injury, and that might have been something to do with his injury, but it could have also been something to do with like Menachino being like, hey, change your stance, you can hit whatever. But it's a team that should be hitting home runs, isn't hitting home runs. I'm going to take the bold stance here and say that nobody's going to hit 20 home runs in this team. I'm going to take an extremely bold stance there. But it could be a bit of the deadened ball because we've seen so many balls die on the warning track. But we saw a lot of balls die on the warning track in Kansas City, where in a lot of other places they would have been out. But, you know, it seems like there's just not enough power. Even if it wasn't just hitting singles, there's just like 10% power loss that is just affecting everything, especially with the new balls.
Yeah, Trevor, I think you brought it up in the group. Is this just a matter of like the Babbitt luck catching up with them? Is this, you could say, geez, they'd have, you know, they're, you know, 5 feet from 50 more home runs. Is probably not the case. You know, some of these things are just the way the ball bounces, but is this just sort of, luck evening out?
So a couple interesting things off of that. it does seem like they've hit a lot of warning track fly balls and balls that are close to getting out. So I was checking into that yesterday. I put up a tweet about it, but the Twitter account, it's like a, I think it's a bot account, but it's called Wood It Dong. And basically it just takes the exit velocity and the launch angle of home runs as well as the distance and says what parks the ball would be gone in versus would not be gone in. And there was a guy that actually compiled all of those into a spreadsheet. The White Sox don't have anyone in the top 90 of the MLB in most home runs that could have donged but did not dong. So it doesn't seem like that's the case. Watching it firsthand, watching every game, it may seem like that, but in reality, there's a lot of other hitters that are flying out to the warning track just as much, if not more. And then as far as the batting average on balls in play that you were talking about, what I found interesting with that is since 2019, I took the road batting average on balls in play. And the reason I just took away games is because that takes the park factors out of things. So Fenway Park or Coors Field obviously have a higher batting average on balls in play than a lot of these other places because of the Green Monster and because Coors Field has such large dimensions and thin air. So anyway, going off of that, the White Sox road batting average on balls in play for the last 4 years is 326. The next highest in the entire league is 306. And the difference between the White Sox in second is the same as the difference between second place and 23rd place. So the White Sox are a huge outlier there with a high batting average on balls in play. And statistically, line drives and ground balls have a higher batting average on balls in play. Fly balls, if they stay in the park, which would mean they're in play, are typically outs. So going off of that, it does seem like the White Sox are hitting a lot of line drives, a lot of ground balls, and they have the second highest opposite field rate over that time. So I know I threw a lot of stats in there at you, but what that boils down to me, especially taking what you said about Menachino with those Marlins teams that also were singles hitting teams, it seems like his philosophy is really hard line drives, make sure you're using the whole field. And that might have unlocked Tim Anderson in 2019. So I have to give him credit for that. It seemed like when TA started using the whole field is when he really took off. But on the flip side, with all these big boppers in the White Sox lineup, focusing so much throughout the entire offseason, drill work, all this stuff, swing work, mentality, all focused on using the whole field and keeping the ball on a line might not be the best philosophy in the modern day baseball with all of these power hitters.
So just quick follow-up before the rest of the field can answer this. Then I'm taking a stupid stance like, well, okay, he's not telling people to beat the ball down into the ground. Okay, that's stupid. Nobody would do that. But do you think perhaps a little bit the whole field or go the other way might be having this sort of sneaky, which on surface sounds very healthy and a smart strategy. And as you pointed out with TA, that was a big thing for him. But maybe that's hurting other guys with that sort of that philosophy could maybe like seep in and actually undermine some of the power on the team.
Yeah, I mean, using the whole field is great. And that's been the philosophy before we had all this advanced analytical data is make sure you're using the whole field. And, but statistically it's easiest to hit home runs to the pull side. So it's a much harder if you're trying to hit home runs oppo or hit home runs to dead center field, the majority of home runs are going to come to your pull side. So a lot of modern day hitting coaches are kind of saying, you know, screw trying to go the other way. We're going to wait till you get your pitch to drive pull side and turn on that thing. And obviously that's not really what Menachino's doing. And you're right. He's definitely not telling them to just beat it into the ground, but such a focus on using the whole field and hitting hard line drives. Like I said, it may not generate the home runs that we're looking for.
Okay. In spite of Trevor's extremely reasoned and embarrassing me with all his great facts, anybody else siding with or putting maybe a little bit more fault on the backs of the players here? Because after all, coaches are hired to be ignored. But anyway, other thoughts about Frank?
I mean, I think we have like all that data just because those three Marlins teams were Frank teams and this team is a Frank team. Like, it does seem to be something that's inherent in what he's teaching as an approach. And like I said, with Tim Anderson, that's a great approach. With some of these other guys that are struggling, like that, you just need some kind of offensive. You've seen Gavin Sheets do a really good job recently of going the opposite way with some balls. It's a good approach, like a two-strike approach or certain players, but changing players fundamentally to be something they're not or something that might provide more value is kind of, I think, where the rubber meets the road on this. Like if you're universally saying like, all right, I know, you know, Eloy might be most valuable hitting three-run homers, but like we want to get his batting average up a little higher, so we're going to have him try to hit more singles. It's not maybe necessarily helping your team. Like it's great that, you know, Jose Abreu's average is up, but like he's, you know, almost 10 home runs down from where he was at this point last year. So like those home runs equated into, you know, the almost 30 more RBIs he had at this point last year, like even with his slow start, you know, so those runs, it's just so many things have to go right for you to continue to chug through and be able to everybody just hit singles and doubles and keep scoring a bunch of runs. And in this game against teams like, you know, the Yankees and the Blue Jays that can just one walk away from putting a two-run homer on you, like you kind of need to just score more runs more reliably, and home runs are just the way to do that, especially in this ballpark that they have.
Yeah. One side note on that. It's almost like an overcorrection to the problems with the 2007 White Sox offense, in a sense, where it was largely that year, if they didn't homer, they didn't score. And they were actually dead last in the American League in runs scored that year, but second in home runs. I don't know. It's just a random thought here, but it's almost as though Menachino and or the White Sox offense looked at that season in isolation and said, see, home runs don't really help. And they decided to put their focus elsewhere.
Yeah. Dylan Cease and Johnny Cueto say, oh, can I have a vote here? I beg to differ. All right. Well, as we're going to wind up our first half of this podcast. So yes, there are two halves, a little extended mix podcast here. Why for this team, they don't deserve it, but hey, why not? Who knows when we'll do the next podcast. And it's not an upper. We're going to have a very constructive second half of the podcast. We're going to end on maybe a downer, or maybe some of you will say not at all. I'm going to go around the table here once again. And I need to ask, presuming it's not yet, although I think somebody's revealed already, one or two of you have, when do you give up on this team? Just 3.5 out. It's really one series away from first place. Not that it's going to happen. But Joe, I'll start again. You up in the corner. When do you give up on this team?
When that gap hits 8 games or so is when I think I would give up on them. Yeah. I'm still going with, yeah, I can't really complete, as dark as it feels today, can't give up on them entirely when no one is really taking a firm grasp of the division.
Yeah, it's true. Jordan, presuming it's not yet, when are you giving up on this team?
Very soon. If it's not today or last night, especially, it's whatever happens in that Astros series. If we get our asses kicked, it doesn't matter if we win the division or whatever. It's not going to matter. Nothing. The playoffs aren't going to matter. We're gonna get swept by Seattle or whoever, Baltimore. We're gonna get swept by someone in the playoffs, and then we're gonna. You know, it doesn't matter. If we play well against the Astros, maybe I'll have some hope. But it's what if we get swept by the Astros and just 3 out of 4 to the Astros, I think the season doesn't matter.
Okay. Yes. Well, welcome. It's a season-long contract, so you're not getting out of it. Dante, have you given up, or when will you give up? I guess you sort of already admit it, but please tell me again.
I mean, like, giving up in this case, I guess is like a, well, they don't really matter at this point. Like, go to the playoffs, they're going to lose.
Yeah.
Don't go to the playoffs, at least they have a higher draft pick. Like, congrats on that. Although, the Rick Hahn history of draft picks.
That's not a plus.
Yeah. So, am I, like, at the core, I'm a fan. I'll never truly give up. I've been watching the Bears for 26 years now. So, you know, giving up isn't a thing. But for this season, it'll be done probably, like Jordan said. Let's see how that Astros series goes.
All right. And shout out to Papa Dante. Listen, at least we're not the Cubs. Okay. Trevor, I see just one bottle behind you. I know there are more. Have you hit that yet? Are you giving up on this team?
I thought I was going to be the one that was going to be the least likely to give up, but Joe saying eight games, man, if they get to six, seven games, I'm going to start questioning it. So, but the good thing is they do have a ton of games coming up against the two teams that they're chasing. So you can't quite count them out, even if they're five games back of the Twins, let's say, with three series to go. You know, that two of their last three series are against the Twins. So theoretically they could make that ground up. So they still have time, but it's dwindling. The more and more we get here into the middle of August.
Yes. Sonny Bratt keeps pointing out that it's just one series away from being in first place, but of course it's also one series away from getting into the Trevor Lyon zone of I've given up because a bad series against Detroit of all teams could put them in that territory. Okay. Adrian, I actually have a follow-up for you, but please first give me your answer on when you give up on this team.
Give up on their hopes to make the playoffs. Could be coming soon, right at the end of this stretch. They got the Tigers, then the Astros, then Cleveland. If they lose that series to Cleveland, it might be just about when I'm going to say, like, playoffs are probably not going to happen. Give up on watching the team, like, it's probably not going to happen. I'm going to be there for all of these terrible games, and I really want to see it just get fun bad.
So sort of giving up, sort of not. Okay, my follow-up specifically to you, although the field can take it unless we run out of time. Given that you – without Celeste Rodonio any longer with us, you are sort of our Leori whisperer. So my question here, as long as we're talking about quick exits from the playoffs, if you knew that his 450-foot, whatever, career best length home run in the playoffs last year was going to earn him a three-year, $15, $16 million contract, would you now wish that he never hit that home run?
No, because it was cool, but the one guy that I wish would listen to Frank Menachino, man, like, could really benefit from that guy hitting for more average and just trying to get on base however he can. Like I said, like, he's still trying to hit that home run every time up, and he's come down a little bit. He was like 11%, I think, when I wrote that article about him on, like, all of his fly balls. 11% of his fly balls were popped up on the infield. I think he's like 10.5% now. So he's coming down, but still 10% of your fly balls popped up on the infield. Like, you have one thing on your mind when you're up there and you're trying to get under a ball and put it a long way. And that's just not his game.
Yeah, if we're not getting a full quote and it was Leury, fuck the long balls.
Yeah,
well, I think we're all, that's a t-shirt, Adrian. That's a t-shirt. But yeah, if it was just like, hey guys, we've got you all assembled, put your breakfast down for a second, fuck the long balls.
I would love Leury out in, like, you know, some of these games when we got these terrible defensive outfields. Like, I'd rather have him defensively out there and, like, whatever he can give you offensively. But, like, we're not even getting that Leury we're getting, or we're gonna play him at shortstop, you know, or some premier position that we really need him to produce in. And it's unfortunate, but I can't have him go down. That home run was magical, and I appreciate it still.
Okay, we have reached our maximum allowed SB Nation recommended Leury Garcia content. So we are going to go to a break. Coming out of that break, we're going to talk a little bit bigger picture for those of this group who hang with me for that second half. Please, all of you do as well. Hang with us for about a minute, and we'll come back with second half of podcast 35 or something else. See you in a bit.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, White Sox fans, thanks for hanging with us through that break. We are back with the second half of this Southside Sox podcast. I believe it's number 35 of this 2022 year. A year very different than last year. Boy, we were just having fun. Boy, remember we did like 60 Field of Dreams podcasts. I had like Colleen and I forget who else. I don't know, Jackie. They were like yelling at me about how stupid Field of Dreams was. We had a whole podcast devoted to 180 I'm for liking Field of Dreams. There's rumors. I'm not sure if Dante provided those rumors. In fact, Dante, I need the Harry Carey hologram update. I would not want to watch that thing. I try to avoid watching the Cubs. Apparently, you know, Papa Dante like ropes you into going to Wrigley Field or something sometimes, or, you know, I don't know, you just find yourself in the park, but not, you know, claiming that you have any particular affinity for the Cubs, but what went on with a hologram and how many times did it accidentally cuss?
Shockingly, no cursing, but they decide, let's go with the Harry Carey, like Tupac, like the Tupac whole thing they did at Coachella, but Harry Carey doing the seventh inning stretch, mm-hmm. which, oh man, that was a thing. That was a thing.
I like, you know, the fact that there are people who are going to hate Field of Dreams, but also somehow like that hologram. I want to have a focus group with that group of people, and I'll run away.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Can we make the Harry Carey hologram the new manager of the White Sox?
It would be an improvement. Of course, you could hologram just. I mean, at some point, you could hologram Terry Bevington, though still alive, as far as I know, Terry. Dear Terry, and you might actually be doing a slightly better job, because at least there'd be some fire. There'd be like fist fights in the stands, weird cussing, weird calling for relievers who are not warming up. Good times. But yeah, I guess he took some contending teams into the tank as well. Anyhow, we are going to try to be, it's the essay portion of the podcast. We're going to talk about what we would change with this team. Now, granted, there are some very, very obvious things, but still I'm going to force all of my guests to actually commit to something. We discussed many times the need to hand the pink slip to Tony La Russa, and that might be your answer, but we're going to go both sort of short-term, maybe a meeting in terms of with an eye toward maybe saving the season. Again, 3.5 outs, strange to talk about saving the season, but also 500, very reasonable in mid-August to be talking about having to rescue the season. Maybe what you do immediately, try to jolt this team into playoff contention, and maybe, who knows, do a little damage in the playoffs. You get there, you know, you get to dance. I don't know. And then maybe long-term, what are you going to do with this team to really change things to, you know, I don't know, fundamentally change where this team's at? Presuming we all think it needs fundamental change. Not quite so sure how everybody's going to choose, but I'm going to let Dante continue rolling. Start me off with the thing you would do right now to try to inject this team and give it the kick it needs in the last 6 weeks to get into the playoffs.
All right, so it depends on if the White Sox are more like the Phillies or if they're more like the Angels. Fire Tony, screw it. Hopefully you're going to do it at the end of the season anyway. It's the easiest answer. But it's like, I'm going easy answer simply because if we're like the Phillies, it might kick the ass a little bit. Be like, okay, we might actually have to take this seriously for half a minute. Or they could be like the Angels and decide that going down the deepest, darkest hole is fine. The hole that makes you think about trading Shohei and makes people say, let's trade Mike Trout. Mm-hmm. So push on the shove, we could end up with some people saying, maybe we don't need Luis Robert. I'm not going to be one of those people. I will be fighting those people. Mm-hmm. But we could go down that rabbit hole somehow. But I'd rather us just get rid of La Russa. I hated it when the Cubs decide, let's wait until earlier, I mean, waiting, not the Cubs, until when the Bears decide, let's wait until the end of the season and fire Nagy. So White Sox, don't wait till the end of the season and fire La Russa.
Adrian, where are you falling on this? What injects this team?
I mean, short term, the biggest impact would be firing Tony. that's probably not going to happen. So I would have to vote probably Menachino next, just as at least a signal to the team that, like, hey, whatever's happening is not good enough. And, like, maybe try to get some kind of energy. Maybe they go on a, you know, Frank Menachino revenge tour, you know, just to try to prove that he wasn't the problem. Like, whatever it takes to motivate these guys, there needs just to be accountability for somebody that's not Dallas Keuchel, because that accountability was not a message to anybody. Except for that, you know, they only really care if they're paying you too much, you know? So,
yeah.
But yeah, that's short term. I think those are the two answers, but one is more likely to happen, but yeah. I don't think either does.
The revenge tour stats immediately, 38% of all batted balls in play, just pop-ups over catcher. That's all. That'll be the revenge. Jordan, thoughts on what might immediately, or I don't know, rescue the season? I guess that's how we're posing it.
I mean, I'm not going to repeat what everyone else has said and fire Tony. I find someone who can play the outfield, because I don't like seeing an outfield of, oh, what was it the other day? It was Gavin Sheets, AJ Pollock in center, and Andrew Vaughn. Right. I'd like, there was last night, there was a couple of times where it was like, man, if we'd had a better outfield defense or someone who could throw the ball from the outfield, I don't care if they can hit. I just want someone who can field the ball that's above average.
Yeah. Yeah, and Trevor, I'm going to jump right to you on that. One thing that you've spoken of, I think, is just this utter. I mean, granted, it doesn't take a former player, it doesn't take any sort of brain surgeon to know this, but I think you've spoken specifically about the utter lack of fundamentals on this team. I mean, simple stuff that really even little league teams manage to convert on, hitting cutoff men, et cetera. But you know, broader than that, is there something you do with this team to get them not to the six games that will force you to give up on them, but actually get you back and engaged?
Yeah. Well, right now, as we're recording this, the Field of Dreams game is in the ninth inning. So I can still say this, but there's only one person on the face of the earth that has ever managed a team to a successful Field of Dreams game win. And he's sitting in the White Sox dugout.
Don't fire him!
Yeah. It's not Tony La Russa. It's true. Miguel Cairo.
That's true.
Tony La Russa was suspended for the Field of Dreams game. Yep. So let's get Miguel Cairo at the helm. I want, if I'm him, I'm telling him, okay, Tony may have told you we can jog it down to first to prevent injury. Hey, it's go time now. Mm-hmm. We got to win. You're hustling it out. There's nothing mm-hmm. that makes me more mad than seeing Luis Robert jogging over to a ball and Nicky Lopez taking second right in his face. So it's hustle. It's 100% of the time. That Eaton dude, I've never even heard of him before this series, but that Eaton dude out in right field sprinting over to the wall and crashing into it to prevent that double. That's what the White Sox need. And then what Adrian was saying as well, ultimately it comes down to the players. I know I was talking about Menachino. It comes down to the players. The players have to produce, but you know, if you fire Menachino, at least that sends mm-hmm. a message to them, whether it was Menachino's fault or it's the player's fault, something to light a fire under this team.
Okay. Trevor, Joe, hang with me just a second here. Trevor, let me follow up again, coming from recent playing days. Is that something, what you're saying? Hey, Cairo comes in and says, forget, we got all bread. They're screening new t-shirts. We're hustling the first, whatever. Whatever the new lingo is going to be. Can you do that? Can you do that with at a professional level? Can you do that now, what, 5-6 through the season? Do you think that switch can be turned?
It really depends on the relationship that Cairo currently has with the team. I don't know if he's built up that trust or that level of respect. But it can go one of two ways. Either they completely abandon ship and totally give up on the team and they're headed right to the spot where they're headed right now, or it, you know, they can rally around Cairo or rally around Chris Johnson or whoever they bring up for Menachino, or rally around the firing of Menachino, like Adrian was saying, and say, hey, we want to prove that Menachino was doing fine or something, whatever it may be, some sort of change to hopefully light a fire under them. Because the alternative is exactly where they're going right now.
Joe, it's your task to rescue them from where they are going right now. Now, you maybe were the most forgiving. I don't know what my answer to the question would be when I give up on the team. I guess I can't. So I guess I can't answer the question because I can't let the beloved Southside Sox site go dark. But Joe, what would you do to inject this team with the energy it needs to, I don't know, get closer?
Yeah, we mentioned it a little bit on the first half of the podcast, which is that the team has no energy. The manager has a lot to do with that. In addition to his many flaws with the tactical decisions in game, I think the one thing that is possible to do that could be done, theoretically in the blink of an eye would be to fire Tony. In terms of things that are, I guess, nothing that would be within the control of anyone within the organization necessarily, besides, I guess, the players themselves. If Leury Garcia found his 2021 version of himself, that would be a huge step up over what he has contributed this year. And we got a taste of retro Yasmani Grandal today. One of the few bright spots in the offense, even despite all those hits that they had, not a lot of overall bright spots in the offense. So the 2021 versions of Grandal and Garcia, I think would light a spark under the team if they were able to get back to their normal selves.
All right. So four, send Tony to the farm, and one, deliver whatever pregame meal Leury was eating last year to him for the whole rest of the season now, and just see what happens. Because yes, we do need that Leury, who ended up hitting that very long home run that Adrian would not trade back. He wants all 3 years of the Leury Garcia experience, and don't White Sox, don't you dare cheat him of that. Let's get a little broader, team. Let's talk about something, maybe more institutionally, that goes beyond this season, because let's face it, it's extremely likely. I believe the playoff chances, they're probably down in the 30s again. It's not great playoff chances. But even if they make it, yes, we've all been through it. Yeah, they're going to get swept, but whatever. They won't even show up because they're embarrassed. Sure. Okay, so it's not going to be a World Series this year. Okay, we got it. What we were promised will not be delivered. But okay, so looking beyond that then, we're in the off season. We're looking to the rest of the 2020s. We're looking at this window of contention, whatever it is. It's shattered now. It's nailed shut, whatever it is. How do you open that back up? What do you do with this team? Where do you start? What's at least one thing you'd want to do to this team to really and truly change it? I know there's some real easy answers. Maybe go beyond ownership, general manager, or manager change, although those are fair answers as well. Adrian, let's go back to you and start us off here. Something a little more fundamental. What'd you do? What would you do?
Outside of obviously, you need to change at least the manager, if not the general manager, going forward. I think they're just in need of a reset. Out of the two, Tony, I think, is the easiest to pop out. I would go as far as to say, if you were actually bringing Tony back next year, which is the rumor that he's coming back next year, then you might as well just trade Dylan Cease, because you're not going to compete. You might as well let's get ready for the next run, because you're going to let Tony do this farewell tour and go out on his own terms this time. But they just need guys that come in here and actually look at the players they have and use them to their value, rather than trying to just push some kind of system or belief system onto them. Not every player is made the same. Holding all of these players to, Jose Abreu can hit to the opposite field and get his average up and he's doing fine. You can't hold everybody that, same level. Tony Gwynn could hit to all fields, but not everybody's Tony Gwynn, If Gavin Sheets is being stunted in development, or Andrew Vaughn is being stunted in his development by not just letting him get up here and be comfortable and rake and think less, that needs to be addressed. A guy like Leury Garcia, that's been nothing but valuable for, 7 years almost now, is completely useless in the hands of a supposed Hall of Fame manager who just has no idea how to use him to his strengths. He only wants to force him into some mold that he has in his mind from a player that he used to know that, you know, I'm not even sure that he calls these guys by their right names. I feel like he just calls them by like random Cardinals players' names.
Yep. Totally Eckstein. Totally.
He's just trying to fit them into an archetype of what he thinks they should be rather than looking at that player and saying, I think this is what he does well. Let's concentrate on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. I was envisioning asking the question of you, Adrian, about the whole area. Would you get rid of him, whatever? I'm thinking, you know, just in the off season, you know, I can imagine Rick like maybe just sending like a little text to Tony or like a little short call, like, hey, you know, what do we do with Leuria? And I'm sure it wasn't even just like, okay, yeah, I want him back. I really need him. He's max man or whatever. I'm sure he was just like 315, and he was just expected. Okay, that's done. Give it to him. I mean, granted, I can't imagine that Rick is just that ineffectual at this point as a GM, but yeah, at this point, who knows?
I think Rick saw the value in having a guy that mm-hmm. plays all his positions just with all the injuries last year. But like, you knew something was weird right off the bat because they just did not want to play Leury in the outfield. And he's like, you know, one of your better defensive corner outfielders, at least just because he's not a great center fielder, but he can play it over, you know, the rotting corpse of AJ Pollock that we've seen in the outfield so far this year. Like, so that just the fact that they're not utilizing that big pool of value that he has to you as a guy that can play multiple positions and they only want to make him a middle infielder. Like, it's just very weird. And I don't know if it's the trainers or Tony or the club. Like, I don't know. We're going to get answers for this, you know, 5-10 years from now when people start talking about it. But right now it's just anybody's guess.
I can speak for Trevor even with one arm, but I would dare say the five of us could be as good or better defensive outfielders than some of the corner outfielders they've been running out there. And who knows, maybe one or two of us could be better in center field than AJ Pollock. Jordan, not immediate, but sort of long-term institutional change you would want to see happen with the White Sox beyond 2022.
Wow, there's a million different things I can think of. I think it would be cool and completely unrealistic to see if we can try and sign Aaron Judge this offseason, but that's completely unrealistic. I think getting rid of Rick Hahn, I think he's hampering this team. I don't care if it's like whatever Jerry said or whatever, that he hasn't fired Tony La Russa by now, but he's kind of being too much of a yes man. And just, dude wasted however much money on Leury and bullpen arms this offseason when he could have gotten someone good, or, you know, given Carlos Rodon a qualifying offer or whatever. If we're not in playoff contention by trade deadline 2024, just, I guess, rebuild again.
Yeah. As much as we get down on Tony for being like, passive or lazy, Rick Hahn, he cannot be proud of the job he has done, maybe at all. Certainly not recently. Dante, longer term, I imagine involves a shifting of ownership of this team, but, that or what else you got?
Oh, don't give me ownership of this squad. But I've said it before, so, you know, gonna say it again. It starts from the farm. And the guy that, like, Rick Hahn's job is farm management. So that's not the only reason he should be gone. I mean, it's probably in the middle of the reasons, but not the only reason. But I would say the team needs to make the farm a robust farm. I've said before, I'd rather them be more like the Dodgers, where they can trade the farm guys and still have three other guys who can play that position. There's a problem when you have to have like three first basemen playing corner outfield. Why do you not have an outfielder you can be like, oh, that guy, come up, come play the corner for a week or two? Why is Lynn Sosa going to get sent back down to AAA or AA, whichever one he was in at the moment, the second that they say, okay, we have Tim Anderson healthy, when Lynn Sosa should begin as many at-bats as he can that are valuable right now? Like, the way they mismanaged this roster from the lowest level to the highest level is just an indictment of this regime. And Tony La Russa isn't the only member of this regime that's been here for a while. Also, I did a little bit of Wikipedia searching on Menachino. Mm-hmm. He was a player that had 5.4 war. He batted, let me make sure I'm getting my numbers right. Let me make sure. 5.4 war, batted 240, 36 home runs, 149 RBIs. The reason he's not telling guys to hit bombs is because he did not hit bombs.
Dante with the indictment, and he's got the receipts to back it up. Okay, yeah, you heard Dante. We would prefer the White Sox farm to be like the Dodgers. Okay, go do it, White Sox. I mean, maybe you just got to take all of the Dodgers guys. It is despicable that the Dodgers just continue to just send guys throughout the major leagues, send all sorts of prospects everywhere. And still, I don't know what I saw. They got like 9 top 50 or top 100. They got some ungodly, ridiculous amount, even with giving everybody away, and just more guys come through. One thing that's always bugged me, although you could argue that the White Sox rookie league teams aren't really that good, so why would you actually give them license to operate too? But why in the world, if you're allowed to, why wouldn't you just max out your teams? You know, I understand two terrible DSL teams or two terrible Arizona teams. I don't know. They're just going to make everybody depressed or something, but it gives you twice the rostered guys to maybe catch fire.
But Jerry could get a new couch.
That's true. Hey, you know, I once worked for a magazine that right before it went under, the publisher bought a Porsche, and then he decided to fold the magazine. So, yeah. Ooh, that hurts. That hits me personally, Adrian. And yes, he might need that new couch. Joe Reeses, give me your solution longer term for this White Sox team.
Yeah, the defensive positioning is absolutely a big one. I feel kind of bad for Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets for having to run out to right to the outfield positions. Knowing that, you know, that wasn't how they imagined their time in Major League Baseball going. In addition to that, yeah, like the way that the White Sox built up their farm system back a couple of years ago, when it was one of the best in the league, they did it in a way that wasn't sustainable, in that in order to get that their farm system to an elite level, they traded a lot of premium trade ships and also had some early draft picks, as opposed to simply just, you know, signing in a player from, say, from the Dominican Republic, you know, who is a very raw product and who no one really thinks, you know, is a super talent, you know, right off the bat, and, you know, developing them from almost from scratch and into a good major leaguer. Like, their track record for that is very poor. So being able to have a sustainable way of having a solid pipeline of prospects coming up through their system would go a long way for them.
To your first point, Joe, the oral histories are lazy, but I do want the oral history one day of Andrew Vaughn being thrown an outfielder's mitt at the end of spring training and told with, I believe, two, I don't think he played all three games, with two games under his belt to start in the major league outfield. It would be way different if these corner outfielders were like, man, these guys are so versatile the way they're trying to sell Vaughn on us. Well, they're so versatile. They played their way into a corner position because, man, they're at least average. They can handle it. They've shown flashes. Neither of these guys have done that. It's just because they're not dead. They get to still play at the major league level. It's extraordinary. Speaking directly to something Trevor, as a very recent college baseball player, can speak to, you just can't really try to play that way. You can't, it doesn't match that way. That's just not how it works. Although it speaks to how desperate the White Sox are in their system. Trevor, what do you got in terms of, I don't know, something maybe more sustained with this team? What needs to change with these guys?
Yeah, like you were talking about, throwing Vaughn in there at the end of spring training last year and this year, he actually So I think he's probably been maybe like a 7 out of 10 for what my expectations were coming in. And he's still the worst outfielder in the major leagues. He's the worst outfielder in the major leagues, and he's exceeded expectations. So what they were asking him to do was absolutely crazy. And Sheets, the same thing, just throwing him into right field or two first baseman. That's what they are. So that's what I would do in the offseason. I want to preface it by saying that I've gained a ton of respect for Jose Abreu this year, totally reinventing himself, playing through injuries that some of these other guys may not be playing through. He's been the one constant this year, and he's been their most productive player this year. But despite all that, I would not re-sign him this offseason. He's an integral part of the clubhouse, so that's something that can't necessarily be defined by numbers. But their clubhouse, these guys aren't showing any fire. He's not really showing any crazy leadership qualities this year. Yeah. So I'm throwing that out the window. And you're getting rid of your most productive offensive player, but the money that it would take to re-sign him now is freed up to do other things to improve your team as well. And it also frees up first base for all of these guys. They have way too many of these first base DH types, and they need to get more left-handed, and they need to get more flexible defensively. And letting Abreu walk, while it would hurt on an emotional level, it's smart on a business level or on a performance level, in my opinion.
You heard it here first. Trevor Lyons, respected member of the Southside Sox staff and half of the Dugout Metrics podcast, delicious podcast. It's rumored. It is a rumored podcast. Actually is endorsing giving an additional $20 million to $18 million to Rick Hahn in this offseason. That is a bold take, Trevor. I guess it means he's going to actually make a good move with that $18 million.
A lot of bold yeah, money. That. Yeah, that's a crapshoot, but hopefully.
All right, let's do a speed round. I don't know if we're up against it yet here for this extended mix podcast, but there's been talk about, oh, you know, hey, at some point, I think it even came up here, you know, you trade Dylan Cease because he's not going to sign with the Sox. And, or there was even talk, listen, are the White Sox going to listen to offers on Lance Lynn? Yeah, what was those offers going to be? Lance Lynn and Lucas Giolito, this trade deadline, right? We've heard so many stories about how Jerry Reinsdorf at age 80, 90, whatever he is, had to be dragged into a rebuild by Rick Hahn, right? It looms as a possibility, given that, you know, this run with the team, as Trevor just pointed out, the leadership that Jose is supposed to be, you know, this is so highly touted for as the unofficial captain of the team. Well, it's not clicking. I mean, I hope some guys are listening to him, but even like Luis Robert, a guy who's one of the closest players on the team to him, doesn't maybe seem to be listening to him. What is the likelihood of the White Sox shifting into a rebuild? At any point in this in near future, with this core, I don't think it could possibly happen this offseason, no matter how this season ends. But what do you put the likelihood at? We'll start top left corner for the block, and let's go with Dante again. Chances of a rebuild in our near lifetimes.
I'm about to check. I just want to make sure that I'm right about this because I'm pretty sure Tim's contract's coming up soon. Mm-hmm. So Tim's contract is 20 days, a free agent after next season.
Mm-hmm.
And Jose's a free agent this upcoming offseason. Luis Robert and Lloyd Mendez don't have that much time left compared to what they could have. So, like, you could feasibly see them being like, in, after 2023, depending on where it goes, in 2024 trade deadline, I could see the White Sox have traded Luis Robert for 7 prospects from the Yankees or something to continue building their Death Star of an offense. And then, like, just that's where it all begins. Now, again, as I said earlier, do not ever want to be in that universe where Luis Robert is not a member of the Chicago White Sox. Think he's going to end up being one of the best players in baseball. Heck, I still have some hope for Eloy Jimenez, which is mostly built on the fact that I have his jersey.
Yeah, that would have to be the justification. Yeah.
All I need is for him to become Pete Alonso and win some home run derbies. We're good. That's all I need.
All right. Yes, but that'll make the jersey legit.
Like, we can eat, like, we can easily in 2024, 2025 be at the rebuild point if something doesn't change very soon. As in, like, by the end of October, there should be at least one or two members of the three-headed monster gone. Mm.
Yeah, okay. That, and that would, yeah, I don't know. I guess that would be a redevotion to the window of contention. But yeah, you could argue we're even in the beginning stages of it, depending on what happens in these next 6 weeks. Jordan, chances of rebuild, near future.
I think I said it previously, but I think it's trade deadline 2024. If you're not in contention, or if you haven't, you didn't win a World Series in 2023, that's when you start selling. I think you start soft rebuilding in the middle of 2024, something like trading Giolito, trading Lance Lynn. I think he's still under contract. When's he, or is it that next year? That's when you start looking at some of the older guys. I don't think you start looking at like your Luis Roberts yet in 2024, but you look at your Giolitos, you look at your, who else would be on this team in 2024?
I think the pitcher is going to be Dylan Cease, and that's it.
That's when you trade. I wouldn't trade Cease yet though. At that point, I think you hold on to a little sliver of hope. You trade some of the guys that are going to get you some of that depth we've been looking for, and maybe sign some guys that off season. And if that doesn't work out, you blow it up in 2025. But
I'll insert my answer to the question. That is, we're already in a rebuild because we have no pitching. Jordan just spoke to that. There's no pitching. I don't know where they're going to get their pitching. You need to have pitching. There already is no pitching, and there's definitely very shortly going to be no pitching. I believe Giolito gone 2024. Lance Lynn may not even, for all we know, might not live to 2024 as a baseball player, at least. Joe Reeses, chances of rebuild.
Let's see. It depends on the time frame we're looking at. If for like before the end of 2022, I'd say less than 1%. During 2023, maybe like 10% in the off season after like 2023 to 2024. I'm overall not feeling like there will be one in the at least super near term. As long as they have at least a solid chunk of the cornerstones of the rebuild still on the roster, I think that's I don't envision that happening unless they're really struggling next year. What I will say is if they do surprise me and do another rebuild, set sometime before the end of or before the beginning of the 2024 season, I really hope that Rickon is not part of it. we've seen the movie play out before now. Like, so if this rebuilds with this core is going to end in two early playoff exits and that's it, then that would have been the result of them being in a good position to start a rebuild with in 2016 with Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, yep. Adam Eaton. That was his value never got higher. He was a premium trade chip then. So if Rickon couldn't make it work with all of that going for him, then I certainly wouldn't want him to do it the next time.
Yeah, the man, if he has any dignity, he would just resign because no. I think what Dante said, I think this could really hinge, if we're talking about this, which is preposterous, and you could argue with the pitching they have, they might already be in sort of a pitching rebuild, might really hinge on Tim Anderson. But we'll see. Boy, there are a lot of question marks around Tim Anderson, that is for sure. Trevor, give me your likelihood of rebuild with or without Rickon.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Joe. I hadn't even really thought about it until you brought it up. But within the next year, less than 1% within the next 2 years. I would put it at maybe 5% now that we're kind of talking it out. And then 3 years is kind of a long time into the future to really make any super set predictions that I would feel strongly in. Who knows at that point, but that's kind of next 2 years. I don't really see it happening.
I would never be a guy, as you can tell by all the times I mentioned Dugout Metrics, I would never be a guy who would haunt you over a prediction you made 3 years in the future, Trevor. So don't worry about that.
I would haunt myself. I would haunt myself. I take my prediction seriously. Bobby Dalbec over 27 home runs. I'm still so mad I made it. He's not going to get close.
Okay, Adrian, finish it up here. Chances of a rebuild, especially because you're just rooting for fun bad. So are you a little bit more on the rebuild train?
I mean, by year, like a full rebuild, like what we saw, 0% chance until 4 or 5 years out. We're probably on Andrew Vaughn's clock for like a full rebuild. Okay. The clock on this particular core is probably trade deadline 2023. If they struggle again, Lucas Giolito is the first chip to fall, free agent after next season. And then right behind him is Tim Anderson. So then they have to make another decision about, you know, that would be more of a, like a reshuffling of the core. And then the Tim Anderson decision would be the next big signifier of like whether they're going to pay somebody real money, because it's, regardless of what's going on, his numbers are going to warrant them having to pay real star player money to that Tim Anderson contract in one shape or form. They can try to skirt away on Lucas, you know, which it seems like they're going to try to do. But they're going to have to find pitching somewhere if they're going to choose to go that route. But so basically we're looking like kind of year by year, unfortunately, which is a bad place to be as a fan and a team. Unless we get a big shift in the direction of the, you know, if a new general manager comes in, who knows, you know, maybe then they, you know, want to clear the deck and bring some of their guys in and it's going to be a couple years. But if Rick stays and Kenny stays, next year is 1 year to watch. That's the only year I could see in earnest that they go forward again with this core as assembled, with or without Jose Abreu, obviously is a question mark. But I just can't justify, you know, paying Jose Abreu the money he's getting made now unless he's still going to be a 30 plus home run guy. And like, great, I'm glad he's hit more singles and his average is up a little bit, but like he's really more of like a six hitter now in the way he's approaching, and I don't know if I can put that much payroll towards a six hitter in this lineup.
Yeah, let's pull back the camera and acknowledge that I am addressing, granted it's my fault I brought it up, we are talking about a rebuild in the middle of a contention window. Yes, White Sox, you have done this to us by being 500 with 6 weeks left in the season. Shame on you all. Hey, but not all of you listening, you dear readers, dear listeners, dear viewers. Without you, we would not be here. Thank you, Dante, Jordan, Adrian, Trevor Lyons, just out of nowhere. Love it. Straight out of Louisville. And representing the Indianapolis field office is Super Joseph Reeses. Thanks, everybody, for listening, watching. We'll be back at you. Oh, I don't know, soon, maybe not. Maybe this is the last one of the season. Who knows? I'll keep you guessing.